Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
This is a Lip Media podcast.
Welcome Hello. To The Gays Are Revolting, a definitive weekly news source for contemporary gays, and for the first time here in Sydney.
Sydney! Well, we put the G in LGBTQIA+, and we're here tonight to help you be the best fucking G you can be. So thank you for coming! Now, just before we start, I am supposed to introduce our host tonight, but I did have an announcement to make. Unfortunately, because Tom is here, we have had to reinforce lockout laws. So, Thomas Jaspers, thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Up next, much like Sydney's tram system, he's a little bit slow. Quite broken, and nobody wants to ride him. It's Kyle Dowser.
And what a treat, from New Zealand tonight, the most beautiful, talented person, Jacinta Arden. But we also have Mikey. Like,
you little bitch.
And lastly, he loves the Sydney Gays so much that he has decided to move here. Luke.
Ooh. You guys are welcome.
Yes, welcome. So before we kick off tonight, we would like to acknowledge the Indigenous custodians of this land, past and present. We acknowledge and respect their continuing culture and the contributions they make to the life of this city and this region.
That's right. We'd also like to acknowledge the queer elders that fought and died for the rights that we have today and for things like Mardi Gras to be able to happen. It's fucking amazing. And for us to be able to gather at evenings like this, which is also gorgeous.
Yeah.
Also, just to let you know, very exciting, we're going to be joined by a special guest later in the night, Sultan, who is a Saudi man who sought asylum with his partner here in Australia, and you probably have heard some of their stories in the news, but I'm incredibly excited, and to be quite honest, a little bit nervous to have a chat about that, so we'll have that later in the show. Also, at the very end of the night, we will have a Q&A, so if you have any burning questions,
be kind.
Seek medical advice, but also... try and think of them and save those in your memory for later in the night when we do the Q&A.
And also, please go ahead, take photos, videos throughout the night. I just ask if you could tag @GaysRevoltingPod. I have a court case I'm currently trying to prove that I am here tonight, so if you could tag Luke's Like an Ant as well, that'll come in handy. You may get a subpoena later, but thank you, guys.
And I just want to say a really big thank you to Giant Dwarf for having us this evening. Please give him a round of applause.
What a venue. Stunning.
And
now we I think it's actually been the longest break we've ever had since the last time we actually sat down and recorded. Yes. Because
people hate us.
I know, we got in trouble.
People hate us.
Because we were supposed to do one after the Melbourne show, but our producer was unwell, and so all this stuff happened. So I'm sorry it's been a bit of a break. So the last time we sat down and did this was the Melbourne live recording.
Yeah.
Was it?
Oh, my God. Yes. And obviously Sydney's better.
You can't say that while we're here.
Love. But we haven't caught up. What's news? What's been happening?
I've got a really... I'm currently, because I don't know how much time I have left, mm-hmm. I've decided...
60 seconds.
About a couple hours. I've decided to squeeze my entire year into now.
Right.
So dry July, Movember, Oktoberfest, No Nut November. It's all happening... Right now.
What a fun time.
Right, yeah.
I have
just
a beer.
Tell us about how you haven't slept for 3 days and have been on a lot of MDMA. I don't know if that fits into dry July.
It's been fun, but people were so mad at me. This show, if I don't do the show for 2 weeks, I'm a fucking nightmare.
No, you're a nightmare all the time.
No, we can bash. All the time.
People are like, can't you go in the room and talk for 40 minutes and get it out there?
Yeah.
It's a nightmare to deal with.
Oh, I see. It's like therapy for you, yeah.
What's new with you, Tom?
I have exciting news.
Oh.
Oh.
For the first time in 7 years, I have a boyfriend. He's very handsome, and he's a doctor, and he is my handsome doctor boyfriend.
And he literally cannot describe him without saying doctor in front.
Yeah, no, it's always doctor boyfriend. Text
people, like a lot of my friends don't. So we've been together for a couple of months. I didn't want to say anything on the podcast, you know, weird. But I'm like, okay, we're at the point now. I can say it now. But a lot of my friends don't even know his name. They're just like, how's doctor boyfriend?
Is he here?
No. He's saving people's mental health.
I've got a surprise.
Really, you're dating a doctor.
Tom, I've got a surprise for you backstage. No, I don't.
Yes. Thank you. He's not here because he's in Melbourne, just saving people's lives. Yeah.
How did you meet?
Yeah, how did you
meet
Mr. Doctor? He
works
in mental health
as
well, which is very good for me. I should be getting a checkup, but I wasn't. We met at a really lovely little venue in Melbourne. I don't know if you guys have been to Melbourne before. It's a gorgeous little cocktail bar called The Peel.
Look, I thought you were going to say wet.
Oh, goodness.
No. We did go to wet later, but I don't know, for the people that listen, you know, I fractured my shoulder. I'm actually technically still have a fractured shoulder, and I'm supposed to be wearing a sling, but we got so fucked up 2 weeks ago that I lost my sling.
He's so drinking whatever. Through the pain. Oh, you're drinking
but,
through the
no,
pain.
We met at The Peel. I was making out with this guy, and you know when you're sort of just a bit high and you're like...
It's how all great love stories start.
High hot. You know, like there's a different scoring system when you're a little bit high. So I was making out with this guy, and I was like, well, you're high hot. And this other guy sort of came up to me and was like, So I started making out with him for like an hour and a half. And I was like, oh, this guy's kind of hot. Like, I don't want to, you know, marry him, but he's kind of hot. So making out with him for about an hour and a half. And he was like, do you want to go back to my place? I was like, yeah, sure. And he said, oh, well, let me just introduce my friends and say goodbye to them. And so then I met this other guy.
So surprising.
Who was one of that guy's friends who was hot doctor boyfriend.
Yes.
And
he does have a name, by the way, guys.
Yeah, I know.
He
does have a
name. Do you know his name?
No, that's actually really awkward. I don't know his name. Anyway, so we went back to his place, and that's the night that he fucked me. So, because I've rediscovered bottoming in the last year. It's
also,
so
like
good. It's a lot of work. It's
work.
A lot of you're clapping here down the front. In fact, you're in a row. You're the only person in a row of people in rugby uniforms that's not wearing a rugby uniform. Oh, sorry. What was that? Footy uniforms. You're the. I reckon you must be bottoming a lot if you're.
I love it.
He said, do you know the Lazy Susans? Yes.
Okay, we need to leave that alone.
That was my nickname in high school, yeah.
Has anything happened to you, anyway. Mikey, in the last little while?
Oh, not a lot, really.
No, not really. No, not really.
Just nothing. Well, I've been going back out to drag shows recently, which has been really nice.
Yes, I like your nails tonight.
Oh, thank you.
Look how big his nails
done.
Are.
Very big. No, went to Molly's the other night and saw Missy LeMinx performing. She was reading the fuck out of everybody.
Yes.
And I was sitting there in anticipation, like, please don't come near me. I'm terrified. And then gave us a lovely shout out.
That's
so
great.
No, it was
nice.
Good.
Yeah. What the baby drag?
Baby drag?
Is there
Molly's?
An equivalent night here in Sydney of baby drag? It's sort of a night where people that aren't experience. What's it called? Drag for dollars. Where do they do that?
Just
one. $1.
Yeah. $1?
Australian dollars or Kiwi?
Oh, right.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Okay. Where is that on it? Arc. Oh. No, I sorry.
I love it.
No. Anyway. I only say that a few years ago. I was at Mardi Gras and I was having drinks with friends and they were like, "Let's go to Arc." So we went there and it was the underwear party and I didn't know. So I stripped down to my undies, spent half an hour there. Was like, "This is not the party for me." And then when I left, they'd lost my bag I walked home in the bar manager's gym shorts and a. Okay. Promotional arc singlet, so that's
blah,
why
blah,
I don't
blah.
Like it.
Same as like Thomas story. let's get on with our topics. These people paid money.
I love it.
Love you.
I just want to say something. Kyle gets sassy when we go interstate.
Yeah, I know.
Kyle gets
a little bit.
You guys can.
I know, Kyle. I didn't know you had so much performing experience. When was your solo show?
Yo, don't know, but we get a lot of messages saying, like, I really relate to Kyle. he's like the sweet, nice one. It's an introduction for me into the gay world. Then we go interstate, and he's like a fucking gremlin.
I will kill you.
He will come for you.
Okay. I'll just throw ammo on him, and he's, ooh.
Please don't throw ammo on me. Okay, yes. And topics.
Sorry, Kyle.
I'm trying to keep things under control here. Okay?
So topic one is me addressing my problem with Kyle tonight. No.
I hope, buckle in, everybody.
No, I wanted to talk about something. It's an age-old question in our community. I'm sure we've all thought about this with our friends and our brothers and sisters. Is there a wrong way to come out of the closet? The answer is yes. So, end of the topic. We're
Before
done.
Before you ask yourself.
I came out by passing out in the bathroom of a gay karaoke bar.
Yes. And
is that when your dad carried you out?
I had to call my dad. I was 16. Yeah. He thought I was in bed.
Yeah, that's a bad way.
And I said, I'm not. I'm actually currently... I did not...
And he said, just let me finish this number. I'll get off the stage and come pick you up.
I'm kind of busy, Luke.
Yeah.
I said, I'm actually passing out in a bathroom and I don't know what universe I'm in right now. And it's a gay bar. And I'm very sorry, Dad. He came and carried me out. But what I wanted to talk about is something that we may have seen on Twitter or in the news recently. There has been a little conundrums about a recent announcement that Jamila Jamil, one of the stars of The Good Place, very good TV show. Now, HBO announced that she would actually be a judge on a new reality TV show. I love me some reality TV.
And they also mispronounced that she was going to be emceeing as well. Oh, and everyone was like, what the fuck? What are you talking about?
And so this reality TV show is called Legendary, and it covers... It's a competition about the ballroom scene or ballroom culture. Who's seen Paris is Burning or Pose?
Yeah, we should probably specify the difference between the ballroom scene of this and, like, the Strictly ballroom scene. It's very
not Strictly Baz Luhrmann. Yeah. We're talking Paris is Burning. For the straight people, RuPaul's Drag Race.
Yeah.
thank you.
Good enough.
Thank you. And there was a lot of backlash to this announcement. Despite Jamila being a woman of color, and she's quite outspoken on Twitter, she's launched a lot of campaigns about body positivity, sort of celebrities. Her number one target is the K's, the Kardashians, for some diet pills. She's very outspoken. But people still thought, is this the right fit for someone to judge a queer dancing ballroom show?
Has she been on like anything like gay or queer related any time before this?
The Good Place is pretty gay.
I liked her in like the one episode I watched of it, but
it launched into this argument about whether we're gatekeeping our culture.
Did
so
you say gatekeeping?
Gatekeeping.
Yes. Okay, good.
And is that the right thing to do in 2020? Yeah. We want equality. We want everyone to have the good stuff.
Yeah.
I want everyone to come out wearing shit like this. Just, you know. This is what I wear to go shopping. Yeah. This is what I pick up the groceries in.
That would be a leg warmer on me, just so you know.
Yeah. But the point is, the gatekeeping is absolutely justified, in my opinion, in this case.
Yeah.
Because ballroom culture is something that was created by people that were marginalized, even within our community.
Yeah.
They had to create that, and they had to be gatekeepers of it, because they weren't accepted anywhere else.
Yeah.
So for someone that they perceived to be a cis straight woman to be judging the show, you know, it was a bit of a no bueno. It kind of stung.
Forgive me if I'm wrong, but there was also all, it was sort of double-handed. It was the fact that people didn't know that she was queer, and but also the fact that she's South Asian, and the ballroom New York scene was predominantly black and Southern American.
Oh, I didn't know that aspect.
It was predominantly black and trans in New York in the 80s is where this scene sort of culminated. So there was a weird disparity in there. A number of like notable members of the trans community stood out and said, "Hey, I actually applied for this role and I didn't get it." And it went to this person instead. As in kind of retaliation to this backlash, Jamila actually came out as a queer woman.
Yeah.
And then, I'm sorry, guys, it got real complicated real fucking quick. Yeah. Because is it anyone's place to say you're using your queerness as a defense? Or to question someone's narrative as to none of us chose.
It just seemed like very convenient for her to come out at that time. Mm-hmm. Like, why come out when you use it? So and that's the tea.
Aren't they?
I think it's very convenient. Like, why?
Yeah, but that's a very dangerous territory you're getting into, because quite often a lot of us come out at the point when we finally don't have an option. Like, we spend so much, and obviously this is on a mainstream scale on television and press releases and that sort of stuff. But individual coming out stories for people not in that experience, it is you went through school hiding it and making up excuses and things kept happening. And you were like, oh, I was asleep. I didn't know I was fucking him.
Yeah. When I called
for Tom,
when I rang my father at 3 a.m. from that drunken bathroom,
that wasn't a choice.
That wasn't the most convenient time for me to come out. And I'm sure he would have said something similar, like, "I wish you picked a better time."
Yeah.
Other than 3 a.m. covered in vomit.
So whilst I see what you're saying in that, like, it seems opportune. It's like she's also a person of color. Mm. A female in her, mid to late 30s.
She was like in her 30s,
And that's not an easy position to be in the television industry. Mm. So I kind of don't blame her for not coming out as queer at that time. And then feeling like maybe that's the final straw that she had to.
Yeah. And there's the thing, like, she cops a lot of backlash online, like, especially with her health. Like, there was a lot of, like, people were saying, like, inconsistencies with what she was saying. Instead of just, like, going and talking to her about it, everyone was just, like, blasting her online, like, "You're a fucking liar." And so...
Yeah, a lot of people were accusing her of having, I forget the name because it's very hard to pronounce.
Munchausen.
That one.
Yeah.
Munchausen. That condition when,
guys into Munchausen?
Like, I'm so obsessed with Munchausen.
Really? I'd never heard of it until, like,
I've always thought it'd be a really good drag name.
Yeah, so
Munchausen's
a lot of people
by proxy. Oh. Yeah. Welcome to the stage, Munchausen's by proxy. Shut up.
I have been trying to Munchausen by proxy these guys for ages.
Yeah.
You know, in my opinion, so she said in her statement, "I hadn't come out earlier because I wanted to avoid something." Her words, performative bandwagon jumping, which is something that's happening. And in my opinion, I know this isn't a very popular opinion, but it does remind me of JVN's coming out as non-binary and positive a few months ago, in that it is a fundamentally commercially driven decision.
It absolutely is.
It legitimizes capitalistic and oppressive practices. Yes.
People that go into No. You cannot say that JVN... No. People...
You don't come for our JVN.
People that are living with HIV or people that are queer that haven't come to terms with it before they enter the entertainment industry are not doing it to make money. They're doing it because they're scared shitless, because they're already marginalized and treated like shit. And
there was a book launch and a makeup line that same week.
Have you ever come out publicly as HIV positive in the media?
I absolutely don't doubt that it was a difficult thing to do, but I think we are getting into a very grey area.
This whole podcast is a grey area. It's
very, very grey.
And it's important to talk about. Well, actually, here's a fact. Here's a tweet that she sent. Here's a fact. Here's a tweet that she sent months before this whole controversy happened. Someone, just a random fan on Twitter, said something along the lines of, "I love you so much. The only way I could love you more is if you were queer." And she responded at the time, and I've got it quoted here, "I'm on the spectrum, but I do lean more towards boys. I think most of us are on the spectrum, but we have been conditioned to believe that we have to pick a side. People fall in love with people. Happens all the time, and it's beautiful." That is the definition of queer. Yeah. That there is not a better definition of what queer is. Mm-hmm. And no one noticed or cared at the time when she tweeted that tweet.
Absolutely.
No. So she was obviously open to the idea of it. But my issue with this whole situation is actually more about the fact that this is an incredibly cultural show. But if you want to start getting into arguing whether a non-queer person or a person that hasn't come out yet as queer, judging people, then... Again, stop fucking watching RuPaul's Drag Race because Michelle Visage has nothing to do with drag and should not be the be all and end all of drag.
Well, this is the thing. We accept Carson and Ross as judges.
And them as well,
on RuPaul's Drag Race because we see them as sort of placeholders for ourselves or like members outside the community. And I think the decision behind putting someone like Jamila as a judge was, this can be an... what's called an audience surrogate, kind of like Kyle on our show. Is it? It's. I'm here all week.
Oh God, please.
Thanks. There we go. I do think there's an interesting contrast because in the very same week, Philip Schofield.
It was like he was met with such like warm admiration.
ITV presenter came out of their own volition, not within the middle of a turmoil and was met with a lot of positive feedback from the, I think it's my watermelon.
There's flies everywhere. It's so bizarre.
You're stinky.
Sorry, guys. I brought a watermelon. I have scurvy. I just need to eat it. It's prescription. Don't worry.
Fuck is there a watermelon?
Yes, it's prescription.
But that was met with a very different reaction.
Yeah.
But I think...
So just to backtrack a little bit, Philip Schofield, can you fill everyone in for anyone?
So this is someone who's been on British TV for a very long time.
Yeah. And, is that and, guy that you always see popping up in your Facebook and it's like a little clip
it's him and Holly and you. Like they joke all the time.
And,
yeah.
And also someone... And we've spoken to people on the show. We've interviewed people who have... heterosexual relationships, married children, and then come out later in life. And was embraced by the queer community. But at the very same time, we were sort of crucifying someone for coming out as queer. And I think the tricky area is we have... we tend to question, I think, the validity of coming out as queer, especially when people are in hetero-presenting relationships at the time. I think it's something... bisexual people face all the time if they come out when they happen to be dating someone of the opposite gender. At the same time, it is a woman of color. That's everyone's favorite sort of scapegoat to take down. So it doesn't surprise me that one person was met with adulation and the other. But the circumstances were so completely
different. I don't like
it
when people come out as a defense like that. Like, I like it better when... No, I don't
think it's a defense. No, I don't think it was like a defense. Defense to me.
Like, I think it was like...
Not at all.
It's like a Kevin Spacey
This person's life.
It's like a Kevin Spacey situation.
How did you come out? How did you come out?
Not like that.
No. How did you come out?
Huh?
How did you come out? You just decided it was the right time for you?
Tune into an earlier episode.
You decided it was the right time for you?
Yeah.
Was there... did you sort of feel like life was sort of catching up on you and you couldn't keep it a secret anymore?
I don't know. I felt like she was clutching at straws.
No, answer my fucking question.
No, can you just let me talk? I was like, I like it when celebrities come out, like when it's like on their terms and like they can say like a speech or something and be really like inspiring. Like, I don't think celebrities have like an obligation to come out like in any way to anyone. But I think like they do have the opportunity to do some like real good with it. Like there was Nikki Tutorials quite recently, which I mentioned.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And she was forcefully like she...
Well, outed. She was being blackmailed though. Yeah, like there's a big difference.
And like she got such a good reaction from that and she really did well with it. Mm. So I don't like this idea of like coming under fire for something maybe you shouldn't be doing and then being like, oh, no, actually I'm queer. It's fine.
Well, look.
I think that is... let's look at the Ian Thorpe situation.
Yeah.
That was fairly similar kind of a thing, and people sort of met it, embraced it because we know what a gay man is, and that sort of goes back to the Philip Schofield thing. Society knows what a gay man is.
Yeah.
When a young, pretty woman who has had relationships or is having a relationship with a man, says I'm attracted to women, people sort of have this. It's a phase, or it's an excuse, or it's a defense. Yeah. No, you can still be. You can still be bisexual and be Absolutely. Having a relationship with a man. You can be a bisexual woman that's having a relationship with a man and will never have sex with another woman again, but that doesn't mean you're not bisexual anymore. Yeah. And it's something that I think actually gay men in the room, and actually probably a lot of lesbian women, pay attention to. I, at school, had girlfriends and was having sex with girls, and then I went through... Then I was bisexual and was having sex with both, and then was a gay man. And I've always framed that as, I thought I was straight, I thought I was bisexual, and now I know that I'm a gay man. Mm. And I've recently learned that's actually a really unhealthy way of framing it. I was straight. I was bisexual. This is not a passing through thing. And people can go from one to the other and back again. And it's still completely valid. And so when we're sort of looking at this situation, we're judging it because it's a woman who's in a relationship with a man and going, you're saying that you like women, but... Yeah.
I don't know. I think we need like a council to decide. Like she needs to perform the seven wonders, like
American Horror Story. That's actually what we're doing.
And then we just decide.
Yo, guys, just wait until the baboons come out as queer. Oh, then we're gonna have a real, real issue out there.
Terrifying.
That's gonna be a real wildfire for our community.
That got deep.
They're in like a polyamorous relationship, those baboons. Oh, we're going to have a fucking shit show. Yeah.
I saw that. I thought, that's what I'll probably look like the day after Mardi Gras running around.
Oh, my gosh. Go home.
Didn't think the last topic was going to get as deep as it did.
No.
So then put the next topic on, which will probably get deep again. So I do apologize. We do have some lighthearted stuff coming up. Bit of a trigger warning for this one. There will be some words used probably that are slurs against people in our community, and I apologize for that. We'll try not to use them, but it might be easier to explain.
We'll try not point at you.
Yeah.
I'm joking. God.
I want to talk about the ANZ Mardi Gras campaign that's been happening. Yes. Yeah.
We've got a fan in the second row.
They work here.
Oh, yes. Yes. Thank you for the home loan. Just to go recap for anyone that missed it on social media and that sort of stuff. So there was a bit of a survey that said that 80% of LGBTQIA+ Australians received aggressive homophobic slurs directed at them in the last 12 months.
Most of them from Kyle.
Yeah.
Yeah. Apparently, yeah.
thank you. Thank you.
So, okay, what the fuck?
Yeah, fuck you, Tom. Yeah, <like you. laughs>
So ANZ decided to create a love speech, campaign. Yeah. So as opposed to hate speech, a love speech campaign. They have done a lot of stuff with Mardi Gras before. I think they were the ones that did the Gay NZ Gay TMs.
Yes.
I fucking loved them. I thought that's the kind of branding I want. But this one did not go down as well as the Gay TMs.
No.
Unfortunately. So there was a few different parts to the campaign. The main part that has upset people was there was a video that was released, and it featured LGBTI Australians looking at a camera quite solemnly and repeating the slurs that they've heard over time. A lot of them were quite young people, and it was... The response was incredibly triggering, to say the least.
Very quickly as well. Very
there was
quickly,
no... A lot like of the criticism is there was no trigger warning at the start of it, which I think is a bit of an issue. The next thing they also released was a hurt blocker web... What do you call it? A plugin. And so it was a thing you could put onto your web browser that would stop homophobic or transphobic or lesbianphobic
and
or biphobic
replace it with
words.
Like an emoji.
Yeah, like rainbow emojis and coins and stuff.
Which made me sort of think, hang on, is that going to block... their own ads campaign.
Well, that's the thing. Because like, it doesn't block video content whatsoever. It's just written word.
Yeah,
well,
but this
then
is
that blocks
thing.
Their next ad, which was also the poster campaign. And the idea of the poster campaign was to replace words that traditionally are associated with certain groups. So one of the big posters was shared online, and I think it was only released in Sydney, or the posters were only put up in Sydney, but it was like, trans people are so fabulous, and the idea was to sort of...
No, that's not what it said.
It was...
It said, trans people are sick.
Yeah,
and then it waited a few seconds of being so fabulous.
Yeah. Oh, but there's also the visual posters that were posted up on like on the streets.
Like billboards and stuff.
Yeah.
Billboards
it's
like a lesbian just needs a good man, and there was like go. I was like, do they have a team of like dad writers like writing this? It's so cringe. Like I read it.
So
all
the
in, like,
idea
a basic
of that,
white
not
girl.
I'm not defending at all. Please, I'm just trying to explain it before we get stuck into it. The idea of that part of the campaign was to be like, oh, we're used to hearing this word. Let's rephrase the conversation about these people in this way. That was the idea. Let's talk about how it went.
Swimmingly. Swimmingly. This is anyone that's worked in marketing knows that when you do a marketing campaign, there has to be a call to action. There has to be some point to it. And the fundamental issue with this is the call to action in this campaign is let's stop using these words and start using positive words.
Yeah.
But instead of showcasing the positive words, they actually just punched down on a bunch of minorities. And got them to repeat a lot of traumatic words without a trigger warning. So I was flicking through my what is I was flicking through my TikToks the other day, y'all. I was flicking through my Twitter, and I just stopped for a second.
For your
second.
Only fans, yeah.
Yeah. In between my porn viewing,
Jay Fisher,
just. Checking what my friend was up to.
Anything.
So I was just scrolling through, and it actually stopped on that trans people were sick gif. Yeah. And I went, what the fuck is this?
It's pretty triggering.
I don't know how they do it, but the subtitles pop up if you haven't clicked on it. You know, you can see it, and you will just see faggot pop up on your phone. I hate to use the...
I'm definitely triggered. The F word, I hate it. I can't even handle like the surname Fogarty. Like, it's...
No.
It's like, ugh.
What?
Oh, he's...
nothing.
What?
Horrible. I hate that word.
Yeah.
Don't say it. ANZ.
ANZ, you bastards.
And so
it's a hard thing. Yeah.
I think
yeah.
fundamentally the call to action was fucked up on this. It should have been the other way around. The word should have not been in there. Instead, there should have been a number of... members of the queer community explaining what words are positive and reinforcing for one another to lift each other up, because it normalizes speech. Sorry to go on a bit of a rant here, but something that a lot of straight people have asked me, you know, day to day is it's so simple. They say, why don't y'all just reclaim that word? Why don't y'all just make it your own? And so it doesn't work anymore.
But we don't want it used by banks to
well, the issue is we can't reclaim it because banks still think it's okay for it to be broadcast on Twitter. People legitimately still think it's okay to use these words in mainstream media. And I sent y'all a sticker.
Oh, my God.
I sent y'all. Let me... Sorry.
Oh, yeah, that thing you sent the other day.
Look at this. This was at... sorry, guys.
Audio.
This was at my tram stop in a very queer-friendly community.
Oh, yeah, this is fucked up.
This is in between the 86 and Circuit, the two gay bars that I frequently kicked out of. just at the tram stop, someone had put a sticker there that said, "Cure AIDS, kick a poofter to death." So I'm sorry, that's shocking, but it shocked me, and I had to ripped it off.
Got stuck around all over Melbourne the other
and
day.
These were stuck around tram stops, and the thing is, this language is still prevalent. It's still prevalent, and it's somewhat socially acceptable to use it. It's very hard to reclaim a slur and turn it into something positive, which is what ANZ failed to sort of pick up on. People were still being sort of affected by it on a daily basis.
Yeah, that's it.
And so I
still hear kids saying now, like, oh, that's so gay. I literally heard that like 3 days ago on the tram.
I was, I'd finished work the other day and I was walking to my tram stop, just the same one I go to every bloody day. And I just had my headphones in, I was watching something, and then all of a sudden I saw this person like yelling. And I was just like, what the fuck is this person saying? And they were staring directly at me, and all of a sudden all I hear is faggot.
Oh, Jesus.
Like screaming so loud that everyone around me, I looked up and they're all staring at me, and I was just like, fuck, this takes me back to when I was in high school and someone would say that to me. Mm. And all I thought was like, please, please don't get on my fucking tram. Like, just don't. And I was just like sitting on there just like petrified.
Yeah.
And like I called Josh and I was just like, I don't know what to do right now. Like, this is ridiculous. And then watching the fucking ANZ ad, I was just like, are you kidding?
You probably saw it on the same day or the same week. Like, And that's why this language can't be thrown around. It was interesting because within the same week, the AFP, the Australian Federal Police, released a very similar video where they read mean tweets, which also included a number of slurs and hate speech. And their action was much quicker. They took it down probably within a day.
Yeah.
They were like, we're really sorry. Like, that was inappropriate to...
Yeah.
Allow that speech any sort of space, even if it is from members of our community. You don't know the context of people consuming it or being exposed to it. It's different from Jimmy Kimmel, where Taylor Swift goes, "Someone called me fat on Instagram," and we all laugh because these people are minorities. We're all minorities. Yeah. We're not.
Like, I get what the ANZ, like, what they're trying to do. They're trying to, like, start a conversation with shock value.
Yes.
I think they definitely could have done it in a better way.
And
I guess I'm happy that as well, like, it could have been done in a lot worse way. Like, in the advert, it wasn't people, like, screaming this, like, at someone. It was coming from our community. Mm-hmm. And they were paid for it, which was also nice, I guess.
Yeah. Like, I think the important thing is...
I don't think anyone's angry at the people that were reading it.
No.
I think... controversial thought, but as far as advertising goes and the goal of the campaign, it's actually technically a good campaign in that it gives you the emotions that you're supposed to feel when you watch it.
Yeah.
As the incredible Nick Hollis pointed out, though, which is the thing that I'm most angry about this ad, is that it's being promoted to queer people who are attending Mardi Gras. If you've seen that ad, then you've probably liked Mardi Gras on Facebook, you probably live in Sydney, or you probably have been to a gay bar in Australia or something like that. They're not putting this on television.
No.
They're not sending it to the people that actually need to hear it. And as Nick pointed out, which transphobes are attending Mardi Gras that you're showing this ad to, you know? This ad should be shown, and no offense, front row, but this ad should be shown in the grand final of the AFL. You people have probably dealt with...
I think...
with that, you probably have dealt with that kind of behavior from certain parts of the community, but they've specifically targeted it to our community because what they're trying to show you is not... actually, let's teach a lesson. It's let's show the people that might give us money that it looks like we're teaching a lesson. Does that make sense?
Like, it's not a surprise to us that those words exist.
No, we don't want to hear them.
Yeah,
it's a bit confronting because seeing those young queer people with that, and they looked emotional. Yeah. They looked, and they probably were. It was probably a very traumatic experience for them to feel that. If those sort of middle Australians that aren't really connected to this community saw that ad, it actually might have the desired effect that the ad had. But don't fucking show us. We know.
If it was used in the right way, I think, because Mardi Gras, like, you get so many good advert campaigns and stuff, and they're all, like, kind of uplifting and happy, and I like those ones that I call, like, gladverts.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of happy
gladverts.
And,
yeah.
And, like, they're, like, hit you in the feels, and it's, like, a nice feeling, and you want to celebrate, because it's a time of celebration. So you don't want to feel this, like, really negative down feeling.
Yeah.
Also, the Hurt Locker app, I was, like, I don't love it. Like, I feel like you're just putting a rainbow band-aid over some horrible things. Like, you can't keep silencing something until it goes away. Yeah. Ask my hex debt. But it's like...
Did you just do a bit?
Shut up.
Oh my God. He'd been working on that for weeks.
I'm so proud. Baby did her first bit.
Yes, absolutely.
And you have to take everything with a pinch of salt coming from a bank. I mean, it would be much nicer.
And it also goes into the whole... And this is a big conversation of the last 5 to 6 years that we've been having in the queer community about corporate sponsorship.
Are we going to go there? Yeah.
Well, we are going to go there, but yes, we are.
Go there.
And look, my opinion is, as I've said many times before, the people before us, when the 78ers, when they were rounded up and their names were printed in the Sydney Morning Herald and they were arrested and locked up, they got fired from their jobs for being a part of Mardi Gras.
Yeah.
So for some organisations, I think it's kind of fucking amazing that they're putting their name and their money towards supporting this thing happening. This whole festival would not happen, but especially tomorrow night would not happen if there was not corporate sponsorship. Mm-hmm. I don't know the specifics of how Mardi Gras runs. I know people that work on the Melbourne Pride Parade, which is tiny compared to the Sydney Mardi Gras parade, but the only funding they get from the government entirely goes on just closing the streets. So everything else that they pay for has to be done from corporate sponsorship.
Yeah.
Now, having said that, we need to look at who we're taking corporate sponsorship from. And if it is one of the four big banks that is, you know, contributing to detention centres or is donating money
fossil
to
fuels.
Right-wing or fossil fuels or right-wing political parties, then no, they should not be allowed to give their money. Having said that, ANZ, I don't think should be allowed to be putting their money towards big campaigns or put their labels on Mardi Gras.
Yeah.
But I do think it's great that they do run an internal, I think they call it their Pride Network, which is a new thing that's happening in a lot of big organizations. And I think regardless of how evil the company is, a Pride
It's still
network,
visibility, yeah.
It's not even about visibility. It's making sure that staff feel good. Mm-hmm. And then there's also other commercial campaigns. So there was the Bonds campaign that came out.
They're using drag
now that one is about that. Making money. Yeah. Like it's about making money, but there is a side part to it, which is that we are seeing queer people that aren't the traditional underwear model. Mm-hmm. We've got some bears in there. We've got trans people who do not see them bodies like their own in underwear campaigns. Yeah. You know, there's a lot of body dysmorphia in the LGBTI community. So for people of the community to be able to see these billboards and these social media campaigns of people in undies. Selling underwear, I'm kind of also okay with that as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a tricky one because I was talking to someone the other night about sort of sponsorship and do you guys remember when 7-Eleven was selling like gay sandwiches?
What?
And
now the rainbow cheese toasties?
No, it's like a gay GBT, LGBT.
Okay.
It was bad.
Stop.
It was bad. And Smith's has like rainbow chips you can buy now.
Yeah, yeah.
You can buy like Pride flavored.
You buy rainbow
Smiths.
Literally anything.
It smell like ammo and
there's
Tom's
no money
arsehole.
Going.
Yeah. I mean, wouldn't it be cool if we had like a really like gay bank we could like
just
trust?
A super gay
like Bank
gang.
Of Queensland, like with a K.
Yeah,
I just really cute cards and be.
If you're funding fossil fuels and Liberal Party members that discriminate against us, you can't sponsor. I'm sorry to say it. I don't dig it.
Okay.
Especially.
It's over. Yeah.
I'm sorry. Also,
next topic.
I know they've already played, but did you see that a few years ago, Mardi Gras actually declined to do a sponsorship in a partnership with Sexpo because they didn't want to tarnish the family friendly brand of Mardi Gras.
Fuck off.
And the over fetishization of the gay community, and they thought that was inappropriate. But to take sponsorship from a bank ANZ, I think, you know, we have to hold certain decisions accountable.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the job of that's the idea of having a Mardi Gras board, and every other festival that exists. Your responsibility is to make sure that you are taking money from organizations that aligns with our community.
Absolutely, I just wanted to fit that in, and
you've said that to me before.
Yeah, I also misplaced a couple baboons, so if anyone's seen those,
anyway,
our
next topic is a bit of a lighter topic. Weirdly, I'm doing the sexy topic, but tonight we're going to be tonight we're going to be talking about role play, being gay and doing role play. So we've touched on the past on like pup play and leather play and domination and subs. But yeah, like we've never really kind of
servants.
Yes, you had that story. I feel like you have a lot of stories that's that kind of it's your
mostly
forte.
My story.
It's your forte for sure.
Basically.
But yeah, like role play is like a big thing in the queer community.
It's a big thing in sex.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of always thought of it as kind of like a couple's like last resort of like fixing a relationship or something like picture like that's all like right. In the movies and stuff and it's like oh this is like our one last chance but like but yeah it's not actually always about like sexy maid outfits or like firemen and stuff like that
he's tickled it's happening
but there are many aspects of role play in our lives as queer people. Not always sexually, but a lot sexually.
Yeah.
But I mean, like honestly, like we grow up playing a role our whole life. Like we're playing the role of straight, like in like pretending to be straight in front of these people.
My best role yet.
Yeah. Well, some of us not very well.
Longest running role.
I never really got into role play where we were sort of doing characters because I've never really dated anyone that was a good actor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. just the bad ones.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I was
just made
like,
evident by
gay should be like fucking phenomenal role play. You know, like with the theatre background, are you fucking kidding me? Like give me a doctor, I'm going to give you fucking Dr. Quinn. Like go for the Logie. Like fucking... Yes, he's going to comment on how that was an old people reference.
You clearly have not seen Please Like Me.
Ooh.
But
yeah.
The traditional version of what I perceive is role play of like, oh, I'm going to be a dirty nurse.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I'm going to be talk a nun. Dirty, and, yeah. And then the other seven guys in the room, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
I thank you for wearing the outfits I asked you to wear.
Yes, role play.
I'll meet
front
you in
row.
The dressing. Oh, Jesus Christ.
Oh, my God. Thomas, eyes up here.
I just have to call my
we're being
hot
flashed
doctor
by the front row.
Tell him that's
intermission.
Over.
No, but that's like the worst.
Anyway, sorry. Yes.
Yeah. When
yes.
you feel like so daggy, I feel like if I had to like be a doctor in a sexy way, I'd be like, forget all the good parts. Like, have you had enough vitamin D? I'd just be like, how are you getting enough water? Like,
yeah.
Yeah. Nothing.
But yeah, I just sorry. Like, I just you talking about sex makes my
thank you.
Skin go skin to crawl. Goosebumps.
I love roleplay. Roleplay is
you do it?
Yeah. Final Fantasy VII.
Oh, yes.
Okay. Secret of
Mana. Oh my God.
Fucking love it.
Yeah.
Love it.
Actually, being a gamer, like roleplay is such.
I do a lot of roleplay, like sexual roleplay too. I have to be really careful about it because as soon as I put on a costume, there's a very fine line between 13-year-old boy with this body or like something sexy. Like I have to be real careful about my choices. But you're right, like. I'm constantly role-playing as, like, a functioning member of society.
Yeah.
Are you though? Not very well.
Not very well. I'm one of the bad actors that Tom's dated. But I remember once, yes, Kyle is right, our relationship was failing and it was a last-ditch attempt to save it.
Sorry, I didn't know I struck a nerve.
An ex and I decided to do some role-play and I was like, I'm going to get some high-vis shit. I'm going to do like,
oh, you go so costume.
You're going to be a tradie.
You go full costume.
Full costume. I was like, I'm fixing the gutter.
Yeah.
Okay.
But he's just getting you. That's just like air tasker.
it had to be done anyway. Yeah. Then I'm like, I'm going to fix the gutter and then I'm going to spot you in the bedroom. We're going to do a little bit of dialogue and whatever. And then
you're going to go back to fixing the gutter.
Yeah. But it all went wrong very, very quickly.
Okay.
Because when you're doing role play, it sort of it amps up the roles that you're playing in terms of dominance and sub. And so people sort of take sex a little bit further, I feel, when you're doing role play or you're wearing high viz. I highly recommend it.
Yeah.
So I was the tradie, but I was also a sub. Like a sub tradie.
Yeah.
A sub tradie.
Oh, sub.
There's like so, and my ex at the time just went a bit hard. And so I was in my high viz and he was fucking my face.
Oh, yeah.
And he was.
Hang on a second. For the rest of this story,
hang on.
We're going to need it. Anyone else?
At home. No. Thomas just did a hit of Amel on stage.
Share it around, Thomas.
And he's passing
share
it down.
It around.
Oh my God!
Love it.
Are we gonna get arrested for this?
No.
Like, I'm not for this. I will not go to jail.
It's fine.
Again.
There's no visuals on this show. It's all
Thomas
good.
Thomas, come back to the stage.
He's being told off.
Thomas,
he's like, no, bring it here.
Oh,
no. Bring it here.
No.
Bring it to me,
Tom.
Oh God.
Oh goodness.
Tom,
don't peer pressure our audience members into taking Amel.
Okay, sorry. Wow. We just have to wait while the front row gets a hit of Amel.
Get your hit.
Oh, God.
One more.
Get in
all
your
right.
seat.
One more.
Oh, Jess. I love you, Jess.
Lovely.
Oh, sorry. While you're up, I
continue.
Have heard.
This is why they didn't want us to have marriage equality,
guys. No.
This is
guys.
This situation,
guys.
This is
if you could keep it down, we've actually had a few noise complaints. Like, sorry. Yeah. That gag was $7. So
oh
thank
God.
You for the laugh.
I love it.
I was just wondering why you were carrying a Safeway bag all around.
Yeah, it was a secret.
All around Sydney.
And that's gorgeous.
Sorry, for the listeners at home, I just put on a policeman's hat.
Sorry, what were we talking about?
Yeah.
Me going home with 10 AFL players.
Oh, God.
No. We were talking about Final Fantasy VII.
Oh, sorry.
Yes.
So what happens in the first disc, I don't know if you guys have... No, so I was just so... Like, he was fucking my face.
Sorry, back to fucking the face.
It was going too hard, and usually I'm okay with it, but it hit mm-hmm. that spot right at the back, and I threw up.
Oh, goodness.
That'll but do it.
As most of you know, I have a lot of experience with throwing up, so I caught it in my mouth.
Oh.
Because I know how my body works. Don't shame me.
Okay. Were you still, like, cock deep, though?
And I still had a dick
still
in my mouth.
Still a dick in your mouth. Oh, all right.
And so what we discovered on that fateful roleplay
vomit is
evening
the best lube.
Is vomit feels really good to fuck.
No! Get out. I don't want to...
Wow. Shame me.
Love it.
Don't shame me.
I don't want to do this with you anymore.
Do not shame me, guys. Give it a fucking go.
Why do we do this?
Get it.
So role anyway.
Play. Role play, everybody.
It was, yes.
Role play.
It was the most successful blowjob I've ever given.
That was a successful
and you had dinner twice that night.
Okay, moving along.
And so my
you
really ex
stuffed yourself, didn't you?
Well, my ex came in my mouth.
Yeah.
And then I suddenly realized I had a mouth full of vomit and cum.
Yuck.
And no.
Delicious.
I'm so sorry to my people who are here today.
happy Mardi Gras.
Mikey, role play, go.
No, I'm not finished.
No, you're finished. Yeah, you're finished.
All right, come on.
It gets worse.
Oh, how could it get worse?
It doesn't. I didn't have anywhere to do it, so I just, like, spit it. And I didn't want to wreck any of my nice stuff, so I opened the window and I spat it out. And my neighbors were looking at me right across the window over the fence like Mr. Wilson from Home Improvement.
Can this be part of the Patreon episode?
Yeah.
Our producer
some reason we'd charge people
all of that.
All of that.
The lesson is that, you know...
Don't date Luke. Which you all seem to know already, so it's fine.
Oh, if you want a really good time.
I think just to actually try and talk about the topic that we're supposed to talk about.
Yeah.
Oh, that's rich. I'm sorry, how long were you up giving people ammo? Thank you.
I love that.
I'm trying to support. I'm trying to, you know, AFL is a
team.
Melbourne sport. I'm trying to. I'm trying to breed AFL.
Oh, please.
He gets anyway, confidence when he goes
no, but
into
I do think, I yeah. do think, I think, I genuinely, sorry to be serious for half a second, that there is a lot of role play in gay, and I can only speak on this on behalf of gay men, because I am a gay man, but I probably assume a lot of people in the queer spectrum use role play as a way of working out who they are and that sort of thing, because we do, I mean, I role played some straight sex after I realized I wasn't attracted to women anymore, but still went with it anyway. And then even when I was first having sex with men, I was pretending like I knew what the fuck I was doing, and I was fucking scared
totally
shitless. I think there's sort of an element of role play there. I also think there's an element. I don't know if I talked about it on the. Have I talked about the daddy, the guy that called me daddy?
Yes, daddy. at the lives.
No, I did it in my solo show that was not recorded. That.
Oh, thank God.
I might bring to Sydney next year. Wow. so I was dating this guy a few months ago, and he was really into calling me daddy, and I was really into fucking him, so I let him do it. And then I cut it off because the night before Father's Day, he stayed over. In the morning, I woke up and he rolled over, and he's like, "Happy Father's Day, Daddy."
No. Oh, stop. No.
You'd be a terrible father.
My father looks like George Costanza from Seinfeld.
Yeah.
And the thought... Anyway.
To be honest, but I think, but apologized.
There's an element of...
I said sorry.
It was an element in role playing. And even like, I mean, I fucking love saunas.
When
we were working out the Airbnb that we're staying at tonight, I was like, well, I'm at Bodyline, so you guys work out your own accommodation, you know. But... There's an element I feel when I go to a... Like, when I'm in a social situation, I'm very much like a chatty... I want to know about you, I'll tell you about myself and whatever. But when I'm in a sauna, I sort of put on this persona of like, I'm a fuck god. You know?
Totally, yeah.
Sort of god. Walk around being the fuck god. I think that's an element of role play.
I think sex in the LGBTQIA plus community is a lot like a duck's vagina. It's complex and it's labyrinth. Because we are just better at it and we're more adventurous to,
we are,
to,
yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I think the queer community is really into like switching it up with
it's
roles.
It's so true,
and
yeah.
Really comfortable.
Yeah. That
and we've already questioned something that we were told, like we were told that we were something,
yeah.
And we questioned
we're
that.
Like, fuck you, we'll
so
be
we're now
else.
Good at sort of questioning. Yeah. What sex is, mm-hmm. And yeah, you're right. Actually,
I
really
think we
point.
Have a lot of these topics where we're like, why is this sex thing more prevalent in the gay community, and why is this other sex thing more prevalent in the gay community? The thing is, sex is just more prevalent in the gay community.
Yeah, really, really.
We just have more of it.
Obviously, we're going to have more of all the fun stuff.
All about it.
Yeah. Like role playing. If anyone wants to talk to me about Final Fantasy later.
Oh my god! I used to always be girls
later.
In video games.
Lisa,
and then
I see
out of
you rapping. We're gonna have a chat.
He's got the costumes in the back. He's ready to go.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about? You insane Hollywood ass." So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tonight we actually have an amazing guest joining us. It's a tough act to follow that section of the show there. So we're joined by Sultan Jamal, a Saudi man who fled his own country and his conservative stance on homosexuality in search of a free life, and found himself within Australia's detention system.
Yeah.
So it's been a really wild ride, and please welcome Sultan to the stage.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here, Sultan. Now, Sultan, you and your partner now call Australia home, which is amazing.
Yes.
And you guys are on your way to getting your citizenship, which is fantastic.
Hopefully.
And unfortunately, homosexuality still remains illegal in Saudi Arabia and is punishable by death as well. So can you take us back to sort of the beginning and what it was like being gay in Saudi Arabia?
Well, I mean, I arrived in Saudi, I was 30 years old. So by that time...
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, perfect. This is better?
Yeah, much better.
Okay.
Yeah.
See, I told you,
we are recording this.
Sass in Sydney.
All right.
He's got the prep in his step. Sorry.
So I grew up in the States, for the most part. You could probably hear it in my voice, well, my accent. So when I arrived in Saudi, I was 30 years old. I had grown up in San Francisco, so I was... You know, I expected there to be a difference. But I've always been the kind of person that's always been in a relationship. So right when I got there, I found myself a boyfriend. We were together for 6 months. That didn't work out very well. And then I met my boyfriend, Nassar, who's actually over there, and he's the other half of this.
Hi, Nassar.
So I'm 47 now, and we met when I was 30 and he was 19. He chased me.
Whoa.
He chased me.
He chased you.
Let's not let that pass.
Sounds like a Luke story.
So for me, I didn't. There really wasn't much of a gay lifestyle in Saudi Arabia. I mean, I had the boyfriend, and you know, we would escape to Bahrain, we would escape to London, to other countries. Well, maybe I shouldn't use escape considering the final escape. We used to run from Saudi and just kind of like go hit the bars in London and hit the bars in other places. So we didn't really have much of a gay lifestyle. Mm-hmm. I mean, there really isn't one in Saudi Arabia. I mean, there's none of this.
They don't have a Mardi Gras.
There is none of this.
Well, there's a silver lining to Saudi Arabia.
Perhaps. Yeah.
So,
do you guys have a Tom over there?
Oh.
Do you know that?
Do they want another?
No. In the beginning, I was like, "What's that little black bottle right there?" And then I figured it out.
You don't, that's fine.
When you guys all got high.
Oh boy.
But what was the other? I mean, look. In Saudi Arabia, the culture is very much you separate the men from the boys. That's very much in practice. We have in the restaurants a family section, which is like men and wives and children. Mm-hmm. And then you have the men's section. It's actually very easy to be gay in Saudi Arabia because there is that separation of the sexes. I mean, if I was trying to rent a hotel room with a woman, I'd get totally arrested by the time we got upstairs. But it's so much easier to rent a hotel room with a guy.
All right.
Because nobody asks questions, you know. No. They just think you're your best friends. And also with the separation... It's true.
That happens to me all the time.
And we are best friends.
Best friends.
But also with the separation of the sexes, you don't get mixed schools. So boys are always with boys in school, and girls are always with girls in school. So the boys tend to play with the boys, and the girls tend to play with the girls. But it all happens very, very quietly. Nobody really talks about it. Everybody knows what's going on. But nobody really talks about it. And also, our society is one where no one would dare call you gay or even ask you, are you gay? Mm-hmm. You know, you just people just assume that, you know, you're best friends. And they never see you with women because you can't be with a woman in Saudi Arabia unless she's, like, your blood relative. I'll give you an example. My partner, I just got to remember not to use his real name. Oh. Look, we're all friends here, right? So yeah. I trust you all. Hello, if anybody's here from the Saudi
this
embassy.
This will be recorded and released. So this will be recorded and released online. Just
no, I'm getting that. Yeah, just don't tweet hashtag Saudi because then they're going to find you, okay?
Yeah, don't do that.
Don't hashtag Saudi. No, seriously, please. Don't hashtag Saudi. The only fun times were, like, when we would check into a hotel somewhere in Saudi Arabia, because we traveled a lot, is when they ask you, do you want a single bed? Or, you know, do you want a single bed? Or do you want a couple of single beds? And I just always felt like I should just be dangerous. Like, no, we'll just have one big bed.
We're really good friends.
Really,
really good friends. Yes.
So, I mean, look, Saudi Arabia, people fool around. Boys play with the boys, girls play with the girls, but then you get married. And, you know, once you get married, you're expected to put that lifestyle behind you. Mm. You know, you're going to be the wonderful husband to your wife, and you're going to take care of your kids. And, you know, you just kind of forget about all that stuff. With me growing up in the U.S., that just was not an option. I mean, my God, before we met, I was having so much gay sex over there. Grindr works over there, by the way.
Yeah.
It does. Yeah. The only thing is, you're worried that the person you're meeting, is he going to bring along five members of the religious police, at which point you're going to end up on the chopping block.
Catfish.
Yeah. Jeez.
But that's happened. We had
entrapment.
I have a South African friend of ours. He's from South Africa,
Me?
And he was an English school teacher. And he was in his 30s, and the poor guy had lived in Saudi for like 5 or 6 years. And then he got on one of the apps, like Grindr or one of those, and he ended up hooking up with this 19-year-old Saudi student. Mm-hmm. Well, the Saudi student happened to be working for the religious police. And right when they got together to meet, he ended up getting pounced on. And they didn't just take him to jail. No, they took him back to his house. They went through his computers. They went through his personal stuff. They found his collection of gay porn. And they found videos he had shot with other Saudi young men, and he ended up getting sentenced to 2 years in prison and 2,000 lashes. Jeez. So you can imagine, I mean, it tore him apart. But lashing, I mean, it's just a horrible thing. I mean, you're trying to live your life. I mean, you're trying to have sex in an Islamic country, which is not the best of ideas. But, I mean, for him, it just completely changed him. I mean, the way that he was before he went in and the way that he was afterwards, it was a horrible experience for him. So, I mean, I don't know when the last time Saudi Arabia executed somebody for just being gay. I know the last batch of executions they did was, I think, about 35 to 42 people. I'm not exactly sure. Five of those were gay. But they weren't executed because they were gay. They were executed for other stupid reasons. But they just happened to be gay. So executions do continue to happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you understand I was going to say,
it is also that there is often executions happening that are not publicized or not made known to everybody, and that sort of thing is sort of done quietly.
Well, I mean, up until a few years ago, public executions were done in public.
Yeah.
But Saudi Arabia stopped that a few years ago with the new crown prince and with the new king, and also with the drive to create a tourism industry in Saudi Arabia. You just can't be chopping people's heads off out in public.
Yeah.
So that they stopped doing that. But unfortunately, the executions do continue. I mean, look, executions are on the rise right now, but they're also going to start going down, I'm hoping. Saudi Arabia is really watching what it's doing now, especially after the murder of the journalist Jamal Khashoggi.
Yeah.
They're really trying to do what they can to improve their image. They've got a long ways to go. Yeah.
And you've been in a relationship with your partner for 16 whopping years? That's a long time.
Years,
how do you keep something like that a secret?
Well, his mom thought I was just his best friend.
Oh, yeah. That's how I started too, but not for 16 years.
His mom just thought we were best friends. Until
was your mother Kath Day-Nice? Dutch Seawall curry.
Yeah, his mom really was just amazing. But I mean, one thing I hate to say this, but one thing that was able to let us continue is that my partner Nassar keeps saying I want to say his real name, but I'm Nassar.
One day you'll be able to do it and it'll be fine. But at the moment, we'll go with Nassar.
Well, I'll probably say it afterwards, but not unroll this.
No. Yeah, yeah.
His mom. One thing about him is his dad passed away a long, long time ago. And Saudi society is very patriarchal society. Mm-hmm. The dad is in charge. With his dad having passed away so long ago when he was 2 years old, his mom became the boss. But because of the Saudi guardianship system, the oldest son then becomes the boss if his father is no longer around. So a lot of his mother's freedom depended on him from the age he was two or three years old. Mm-hmm. So if his mother wants to go to the hospital, if his mother wants to do certain things, she's got to get his permission. So in a way, he had this thing going with his mom where, you know, she's granted full freedom, and he's granted freedom to do what he wants to do. Mm-hmm. They never talked about being gay or anything at all. But there was just this unspoken understanding, you know, I'll let you do what you want to do, and you let me do what I want to do, and, you know, we'll just all get along. But for the first few months of our relationship, he was still in the university. It was first year of college. He used to come over and tell his mom, oh, I'm just going to be spending the night with my friends. We're going to be studying. And then...
That's a classic line.
It's a good one.
Door closed.
Sultan really likes studying.
And for a long time, all weekend.
Studious. Studious.
And then it just,
young
you know,
man.
A few days came into becoming like a week over at my place, and then, you know, mom would get pissed off, and he's like, come back home for a while. But I remember there's something I was going to say about the separation of the sexes. Let's just go back to that. His brother just got married 3 years ago, and he's got now two boys, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, he just had another baby recently. He's never met his brother's wife. He's not allowed to. He's never seen her. In fact, I don't think he even saw her at the wedding. Yeah, that's another thing. The weddings are separated.
What?
Yeah, the weddings are separated.
How are the weddings separated?
There's a convention room for the men, uh-huh. another one for the women.
So you don't actually see the ceremony together?
Yeah, you don't see the woman's side.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, that's where, like, the father of the groom and the father of the bride, they meet, you know. But you never meet the opposite sex.
Wow. Now, Saudi Arabia is also notoriously harsh on journalists as well. You were interrogated about your job, and they also used your relationship to sort of bribe you. I've read about questions that you were asked that involved things like how many bedrooms do you two have in the house, and then how many beds are in the house, which you lied about the answer to, and then they stormed the house. Is that correct?
Well, no, we never got stormed.
Sorry, I don't want our listeners to miss your answers.
Sorry.
So if we could bring it a little bit.
Yeah, sorry.
I think it's really amazing what you're saying, and I want everyone to be able to hear
Sorry.
A few months prior to the actual interrogation, I was called to a prison on the outskirts of Riyadh, the capital city, and that's a scary prison. That's where you hear all the political arrests are. That's where all those other people that have been victimized. The problem we had is that I was working as a TV producer with a bunch of major networks. I was working with CNN, the BBC. Oh, wow, I can see the difference.
Yeah, there you go.
All right. I can actually hear myself now.
So you worked on TV.
All right,
TV,
so I'm
said.
Just going to... I mean, if it was a dick, it'd be much easier.
Wow. He's a feisty guest.
You're doing all right. You're doing all right. Yeah.
I didn't want to do it, but every time we have a guest, we say, just imagine it's a penis. Yeah. And people get it in like 2 seconds. They're like, got it.
Okay, remove it out of
my
mouth.
All right. So I was working with all the like the major TV networks like CNN, BBC, and you know all those guys. And then Canadian television came to Saudi, and they wanted to do a segment on all the changes and the, you know, empowerment of women and all that. And I was like, all right, great, let's do it. So I, working in the government, I gave them a visa to come for their producer and reporters. And then suddenly she started working on human rights issues, which is fine. I mean, that's what reporters do. I mean, she was doing her job. But I explained to her that, you know, if you start doing human rights interviews here in the kingdom, I guarantee you're being watched from the time you arrive at the airport to the time you get back on your flight. So if you, be careful who you meet. Do not do any human rights interviews here in Saudi Arabia, because those people, I guarantee you, are going to get arrested. Well, she didn't listen to me. She went to another city. She went and did some interviews with a couple of... they like to call them dissidents, but they're just outspoken people that wanted difference in Saudi Arabia. So she did those interviews, and then I didn't know about it, and then she left the country. And then a few months later, this is about May or June of 2018, what she recorded aired. And then Saudi Arabia started doing an investigation about how did this happen? How did this woman come in, do these interviews inside the country? Who gave her the visa? Me. At which point I was called into a prison on the outskirts of Riyadh. The secret police or the presidency of state security, they called me on a Thursday, and they told me, come, we want to talk to you. And I'm like, well, what's this about? They're like, just come on Sunday, we want to talk to you. So I went on Sunday, I arrived at the prison, and they started asking a bunch of questions. I'm going to skip a lot of details, because otherwise no one's going to get any dick tonight. Because we'll just go on for hours. Okay. So, anyways, I'll cut out a lot of the details. But what ended up happening is we got to a scary part of the interrogation, which was, tell us about your life. Who do you live with? I'm like, I live with my friend. And he's like, how long have you been living with your friend? I'm like, on and off, 15, 16 years. Are you married? I'm like, no, I'm not married. Do you have any kids? No, I have no kids. Is your friend married? No, he's not married. And how old is he? It's like, well, now he's 36, and I'm 47. Interesting. You guys lived together for 15, 16 years. I'm like, yes. It's like, how many bedrooms do you have in your house? I was like, well, we had a three-bedroom house. I said, three. She's like, how many beds do you have in the house? Said, well, of course, we only had one bed. I said, oh, no, we have three beds. He's like, look. It's obvious what's going on. You guys are having a secret relationship. Now, of course, I didn't comment. And he said, you know, some secrets don't have to remain secrets. I'm like, well, what are you talking about? What do you mean? He's like, think. Just think. Some secrets don't have to remain secrets. And at that point, I realized that, you know, I was like, well, what do you guys want? I mean, what do you guys want? They're like, we need you to stop working with foreign media. I was getting blamed for a lot of the bad news that was coming out of Saudi Arabia. So they said, stop working with foreign media, and, you know, and go on with your life. So they let me go at the end. I spent about four and a half hours there in that interrogation. My boyfriend was waiting outside in the parking lot for the whole time. At the end, they let me go, and I immediately stopped working with the foreign media. A few months go by, and then I ended up getting stuck for money. I mean, I had to work. Foreign media and journalism was all that I knew in Saudi Arabia. I'd been doing it for a long time, almost 20 years. So when they decided that I couldn't work with the foreign media anymore, they started screwing with me on my job as well, where I lost my job. I ended up kind of almost becoming pretty destitute. I ended up depending on him all the time. Which was
Daddy.
Yeah, I mean,
role play.
Happy Father's Day,
Daddy. So, you know, I stayed working, not working for a few months, and then I started producing these films for Vice Documentaries. You know, they contracted me to do 12 films for them there. All great things about, you know, coffee and camels and, you know, the Camel Festival. Nothing to do with politics or human rights or anything at all, and we were great with that. But then, middle of August of 2019, suddenly we got, his mom suddenly turned against me. She started saying, I don't want you to see him. You know, we got some information that your relationship is not one that would please Allah or God. And she said that he should leave me alone and get away from me. And he refused. He said, no, I'm not going to. At which point his mom got his brother involved. And his brother called last week of August. And he said, we need to stop seeing each other. Because now the tribe, his family is a tribe. I mean, they're huge. And they're very conservative people. So at that point, his brother said, if you don't stop seeing me, they're going to get report us to the authorities, or his family's going to try to kill me. We didn't take that too seriously either. I was like, let's see what happens. Well, on September 5th, I got a phone call from the Criminal Investigation Division of the Interior Ministry in Saudi, and we were living in Riyadh at the time. They called me on a Thursday, and they said they wanted to see me on Sunday again. I was like, all right, we've been through this before. I can handle this. No problem. But then a couple of hours later, he gets a phone call. And he doesn't work for the foreign media. And he's also asked to come into the same police station a couple of hours after me. So we, at that time, decided that his family had reported us. If we showed up at that police station, they're going to separate us forcefully. I don't know what they would do to me. Maybe hand me over to his family. For them to have their way with me, I mean, in their they mind, I've been decide. Having my way with their son for 16 years. So, I mean...
Still getting the gags in. Yeah. Still getting the gags in. I love it.
So, we decided it's time to run. We really, really, really had to just literally... We got the call on September 5th. That night, we started panicking. We had a discussion, like, do we break up? Do we separate? We each go our own way? Or do we make a run for it? And it was an easy decision. We make a run for it. So leaving everything behind,
this was like family members, your career.
Oh, yeah, everything.
Your home country you were fleeing.
Yeah, everything.
Everything
you had to leave
you
behind.
Leaving.
Yeah. I'm sorry, I get emotional when I talk about this.
Please do.
Has anybody got a tissue? Yeah. A room full of gays, somebody's got to have a tissue. No tissue?
I can give you my notes.
So take a second, darling. It's fine.
Yeah.
So we had to make that decision overnight, and it was like, all right, what do we do? We have, well, one problem is that we had a 35-kilogram German Shepherd.
Oh, sure.
So So that was our IC. It was a white German Shepherd. She's still there. So we had to get the dog situated. We had to get all our papers quickly, our passports, his university degrees, everything. Just within 24 hours, we packed up the car. We wanted to drive. We couldn't fly because if the government saw that we got on a flight to another city, from the city they wanted to interrogate us on Sunday, they'd be after us. They'd ban us from traveling immediately. So we packed up our stuff. We drove 9 hours to Jeddah. We dropped off the dog at a good friend's place. And then we booked the first flight we could out of Saudi, which was to Cairo, a country where we don't need a visa. So we flew to Egypt, Cairo. We stayed there for about a month and a half, applied for Canadian visas. They wouldn't give us tourist visas to Canada simply because he didn't have much of a travel history in his new passport. So then we were stuck in Cairo. And it's like, well, now what do we do? So we applied for Australia, simply because he said, you know, Australia, they speak English, the weather is great. And he actually went to an Australian film school, but they had a branch in Saudi. So we decided, okay, we're going to come to Australia. Keep in mind, we're fleeing from being falsely persecuted. We're fleeing from being separated. We're fleeing for our lives. And then we got instant visas. Australia, if you want to know why all the Saudis are running to Australia, because Australia gives us all instant visas. So, God bless you guys for that. But what they don't tell you is that if you arrive in Australia, even with a valid visa, which is what we had tourist visas, yeah, and we wanted to apply for asylum, they're going to cancel your visas and make you illegal. And that's exactly what they did when we arrived in Sydney. We were about 20 yards away from Sydney, from the actual gate. I don't know. Have you guys seen Border Force, that TV show?
Oh, fuck okay. Yes.
I used to love that show.
Yeah, I've seen
that was such a great
show.
Until you actually arrive in that situation and you're that you know, the Sydney
You're the
airport.
Person.
Yeah. I was like, you know, they stopped us at customs. We cleared immigration. We had our passports stamped. And then we get to customs, and they pull us aside. And I was like, oh, how exciting. We're going to be on Border Force.
Yeah, yeah.
No, no.
Oh. Little did you know.
Little did I know that they were going to cancel our visas, take us in for interrogation separately, throw us in a holding cell, and then you had these huge guys, like rugby player size, with tattoos.
Bigger than
Not
AFL,
you guys.
By the way. Much bigger than AFL.
Oh, we would have been lucky if it was you guys that came and handcuffed us.
It would have done your face. Yeah.
No, we ended up getting handcuffed in a not a fun way.
Not a role-play way?
No. Definitely not in a role-playing way. There was no poppers either. So they had us like this.
That's the hardest part
of the story. Barbaric conditions.
So next thing I know, they got us in this van, and they took us to this place called the Villawood Immigration Detention Center. Villawood, believe it or not, it's not a bad place. It seems like a college campus. I mean, when we saw a detention center and this was it, I mean, we would be happy to rent the place there for a few days.
Yeah.
I mean, really, we were initially, because they put us in this unit called the airport unit, where they just, it's a 24-hour turnaround. So it's nice. It was like a little apartment. There's a little kitchenette and a TV and like six rooms, but we were the only ones in that apartment. It was like, well, this isn't bad.
Yeah. Did it have a Netflix account? Could you get The Circle?
No, they took away our laptops, the bastards. Oh. So we didn't have Netflix and we didn't have porn.
Jesus.
No, Amel, no laptops.
So it's like, now what are we going to do? We're going to have sex after 16 years. And there's...
As long as it didn't have Stan on the laptops, that's fine.
Yeah.
Then you'd be forced to watch this thing that we have called torture in Australia, which is called Please Like Me.
Callback.
So the place, the place itself is not bad, okay? But what makes it bad is that they take the asylum seekers and the refugees, like us, never committed a crime, at least not one that we've been caught for, never committed really a crime, never been in a horrible jail situation. So we were like kind of like jail virgins. And then suddenly...
Everyone's a jail virgin at some point in their lives.
Yeah.
But they don't leave that way.
Lucas left the room.
Have you been to jail?
He should.
So,
this bracelet isn't for aesthetic purposes.
So... Yeah, the actual facility is not bad, but what makes it bad is that they have people that have are foreign nationals that had visas in Australia. They were allowed out into society, had committed some kind of... I've got to keep this in my face. They've committed some kind of crime that they've been sentenced to at least 12 months for in Australian prison. So those guys are now out of prison. Some have served years. Some have served 12 months. For a variety of different crimes, from drug dealing to rape to murder. I mean, we're in there with murderers. So those people are all mixed in with the asylum seekers and the refugees. And for us to be in that that atmosphere was quite intimidating. I mean, just from the first day, I had a big Samoan guy. He said, I'm going to kill you, just because I was assigned to be in the same room as him. They didn't assign us to the same room initially, at least not until they found out we were journalists. And then everything changed. And for us, a couple of Saudi guys just arriving in Australia, I was like, horrific. It was scary. Crystal meth. There's so much crystal meth and ice in Australian detention.
Reading your stories, this blows my mind.
Yeah, like
in these detention centers that we're... You know, Australia, right-wing Australia, is like, we've got to be so careful that we've got to keep people in these... awful places that have, you know, that sometimes are on islands or have fencing all around them with called the barbed wire and all that sort of shit around it.
Oh, yeah.
And so we've got to be so careful to keep these people, but obviously there's guards and whoever bringing shit into these centers to...
There are.
You probably can't say who is doing it, but...
Well, I mean, I can't remember the names of the guards, but I remember there was... I remember he had a hospital visit and he went to the hospital for something and he had two guards that were with him in the elevator. And one of the guards opened up his bag to get something out of it. And just the smell of great cannabis just came out of that bag. He was telling me.
I mean, it must have been good stuff. But yeah, the guards are getting it in. But also the other way that it gets in, Australia are very particular about their pat search laws. So they can't really touch you down here. And they can't really do anything there. So visitors coming to the detention centers, they'd actually put the drugs there. And you actually put a lot of drugs in there, apparently.
He's referring to his crutch for the people listening at home.
Yeah, exactly. Yes,
a lot of
yes,
tips
in your segment.
Now, speaking of the guards, at some point, one of the guards said to you that in the 9 years that he'd worked there, he'd never had a gay couple before.
Yeah.
Well, did that make you feel more comfortable or less comfortable? Or?
Well, when he told me that, by that stage, I'd been on the project a couple of times. Our case had already been in the media a lot. So by the time he told me that, we had a 24-hour guards on us, with us. Because I did something stupid in the beginning. When I first started doing the media interviews, all by phone, not in person, I started talking about the drugs that were in Villawood. And, of course, that upset the drug dealers, that upset a lot of the guards. And I was stupid. I mean, it's like, look, I've never been to prison before. So it was just apparently you're not supposed to be talking about those things, especially
rookie
when
mistake.
You're in prison.
Rookie prison mistake.
Yeah, rookie prison mistake. So they actually ended up having guards on us 24 hours. So anytime we would meet, we would walk around, there'd be somebody 3 meters away from us. Every night they would walk into our door, open the door, check that, you know, we're okay. Which is kind of a pain in the ass if you're trying to have sex in the middle of the night. But,
a pain in the ass.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Sorry, that was really fucking awful.
Oh. Yeah.
We'll cut
that.
That
was
one out.
A Carson Kresley joke right there.
Fight.
Oh. They didn't like that.
So it wasn't too bad.
Did you find that being a journalist and having that experience, it helped you sort of get on the project and get some visibility?
Oh,
like, because it sounds hectic.
Oh, absolutely.
Like fully hectic that you were in there.
The Villawood Detention Center, one thing about it, when you mix up refugees and asylum seekers, eventually those refugees and asylum seekers are going to end up getting bridging visas and let out into society. But some bridging visas that they get do not allow them to work. Now, in there, if you make friends in Villawood, you're making friends with drug dealers. You're making friends with people that have had violent crime. You might start using drugs if you get desperate enough. So you're getting people that are pretty clean cut, never had a prison experience, never really used drugs, put them in a desperate situation. Many people end up using drugs, or at least making the connections that once you're outside, if you're not able to work, you're going to be getting in touch with somebody at Villawood. Hey, I can't get a job. What can I do? Well, hey, start selling crystal meth. You know, and this is a bad thing. So you shouldn't mix refugees and asylum seekers, people who are freshly arriving here, with other people that are crystal meth dealers.
Survival work.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You know, people will do survival work.
So to get to the journalism, yes, I mean, I've got numerous influential media personalities that I've worked with in Saudi Arabia. I didn't want to be in the media. I never imagined I'd be sitting up here in front of everybody and talking. We just wanted to run away from Saudi Arabia, maybe not even be known where we are, even not even the country, and just do it quietly and just blend into society, change our names, and, you know, just let it be. But after spending about 30 days in Villawood, we'd had enough. And we said, all right, now's the time to actually start, you know, asking for help. So we were able to, through our lawyer, Allison Battison, if anybody here is a refugee or asylum seeker. All right, somebody knows Allison.
Yay, Allison.
Allison Battison is just, she was amazing in Human Rights for All. I mean, took on our case immediately. And they were just, the whole team was just amazing. Really, we'd still be in Villawood if it wasn't for them. So definitely the journalism helped a lot. We were written about in the New York Times. We were in Time Magazine, Sydney Morning Herald. Yeah, everybody. I was on the project twice without my face, and then one time I showed my face because I promised them I would if they helped us, and they did, so I showed my face. But if it wasn't for all the media attention we got, we would not be out now. If it wasn't for Allison Battison, we wouldn't be out now. So just keep something in mind. Not everybody that arrives in Australia speaks English like this. Some don't speak any English. I have media friends that were able to get me in touch with Allison. Allison took on our case immediately. But a lot of people don't have Allison. A lot of people don't have media friends. A lot of people don't speak English. And those guys are lost within your immigration system. There are guys that have been there. There's one guy, he arrived in Australia when he was 20 years old, heading to New Zealand
with the stopover in Melbourne. He got stopped in Melbourne. He's been in detention for 10 years. Yes. Imagine your 20s, your whole 20s.
My God.
He's still in immigration until now. He's still in detention. His entire 20s were spent in Villawood.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah.
So definitely the fact that we were journalists gave us protection from the beginning. The guards were very careful how they handled us.
Yeah.
We were very well taken care of as far as security-wise after we let it be known that we were journalists. Another difference it made, I can't imagine we'd be talking about this right now, but I'll talk about it really quick, is that when we came from Saudi Arabia, we didn't know that we had tuberculosis, TB. I had been covering the Hajj, pilgrimage, which brings about 3 million people into a 7-square-kilometer area. So there's a lot of people from third world countries, from all over the world, ended up catching TB. So I ended up staying in the hospital for about 47 days until it was no longer infectious.
Well, you were put into the hospital bed, which was $6,000 a day, was it?
$4,000 a day. $4,000
a day.
Pretty much what it costs.
And you were in that hospital bed for how long?
47 days.
For 47 Jeez. Days. Right. And you had the whiteboard above your bed where you were keeping track of how much.
You read a lot.
I read a lot, yes. But it was quite a strike. That image, I think, was quite a striking thing of, here is someone that clearly does not need to be held in detention. This is just someone who's escaping persecution. And here's the telly that they've kept above their bed of how much the taxpayer is paying. And it's a really good point. Why the fuck, you know, this government's supposed to be so good with money.
Okay, when I was in the hospital for 40, my partner was in the hospital for 17 days. I was in the hospital for 47 days. Because it was Liverpool Hospital, I had 3 guards outside my door to make sure I didn't escape, and 3 guards outside his door. There were more guards in that ward than there were nurses. And they were actually getting in the nurses' ways. Now, when you tally up $4,000 a night for a bed, and it's 2 beds, not one, it was 2. that's $8,000 a day. And then there's the guards and the medication and the nurses and the transportation and all that. It was just so much. But the doctors were really, really very, very kind to us at Liverpool Hospital, because his TB ended after 17 days. Mine was a lot more severe. The doctors actually let him stay an extra 6 days in the hospital unnecessarily, just because they didn't want to separate us, which was just amazing. So I'm very grateful to that. But eventually he had to go, and I was stuck in that hospital for 30 days. And I'm really grateful to Australia and Australian people and the Australian government for actually helping cure us of this, because it could have killed us eventually, probably within 5 years. But you got to keep something in mind, and part of the reason I put up that board above my bed, that tally of how much it was costing, was because being in a hospital sucks, okay? Especially when you're not bedridden. I mean, I was healthy. I didn't have any of the signs or symptoms of TB or anything like that, or none of it. And when you're in a hospital, but you got 3 guards outside your room, and you're not allowed out of that room for 30 days, it wasn't any kind of like health concern or anything. It was just the guards and the ABF not wanting to let me out of the room. He wasn't allowed to come and visit until I appeared on the project, until the project got involved. At which point they started to allow him to come and visit me in the hospital 3 times a week. There are people who have relatives, children, who die while they're in custody, and they don't let them out to go visit or go to the funeral. But because of the media attention and also the gays, I mean, the gay community was so instrumental in getting us out. All the attention that was thrust.
It was everywhere on social media.
All the support that we got put pressure on the government to let my partner come and visit me 3 times a week. I started being allowed out of that hospital room I was in for an hour a day. They were letting me go out in the garden, under guard still. But I mean, look, now that it's that shitty part of that god-awful journey is over, I mean, I started a full-time job on Monday.
That's amazing.
Yeah, whoa, I'm very happy about
that's
that.
That's so good.
So,
I fucking hate to be this person, but we have to cut you off.
I told you guys.
But I think what we need to do, and we were talking about this earlier, we need to come up and we probably do a full episode with you, because I think
absolutely.
It'd be
amazing, please.
There's a lot more to talk about. There's so much we haven't covered in your story. there's some wonderful stuff online if you want to have a little bit more of a read, but I do think we need to have like a proper just full episode. Yeah. Even without us, just you, I think it would be quite textbook.
No.
The other thing...
Thank you.
The other thing that I really want to say to you, Sultan, this is your first Mardi Gras tomorrow. Well, the parade will be your first Mardi Gras. And this is a festival that is about love. This is a festival that is entirely about everybody loving the person that they love. And I don't think I've ever heard a story that is more about love than you two. I mean, you could have gotten rid of each other and just lived a closeted life, and you two have been through so much fucking shit together.
We have.
I want you to know, I know you still have contact with certain people back home, but not a lot of people you've had to cut contact with. Every single person on Oxford Street tomorrow night is your logical family now and loves you, and you are part of this Sydney gay fucking
Thank
family.
Thank you. Oh, wow. Now the ugly cry is coming.
You are.
Thank you. You know, that means so much because we did have to leave our families overnight. And just to be adopted by... this whole bunch is just so amazing. Thank you.
Everyone, please thank Sultan for being here tonight. Thank you so much.
I think that's it.
That's it.
Yeah,
I think
that's
it.
Thank you, Mikey.
Welcome back, Mikey.
Oh, isn't that lovely? Thank you. Oh, that's so cute. Thank you, guys. Well, thank you, everybody, so much for coming tonight. And thank you so much for your ongoing support. It really does mean a lot to all of us.
Thank you to our patrons. If you want to support our live shows, you can sign up at patreon.com/gaysrevoltingpod.
Yes.
patreon.com/gaysrevoltingpod. Yes.
And if you go to the parade tomorrow, have a fucking amazing Mardi Gras, everyone.
Be safe.
Be safe.
Look out for friends.
Have a good fucking time.
And
thank you so much.
Hopefully, we'll still be doing this next year, so we'll see you all next year, yeah?
They're playing Charlie.
Let's get fucked up. Bye.
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 They're playing Charlie XCX. Ah.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.